I tell you, one huge problem with this camera is that when it doesn't have power, it doesn't warn you at all that it's about to run out of power, and it just shuts off. So I just lost about 40 minutes of a show. So I'm running the mic directly to the camera this time. Looks like we're going to be out here for a little while. So obviously this show is going to be about believable science. But I wanted to throw out a little tribute to the passing of Sidney J. Mead, the incredible visual futurist who brought us amazing visions in movies like Star Trek The Motion Picture, Tron, Blade Runner, Aliens, 2010 A Space Odyssey, Short Circuit, Tomorrowland, Elysium, and the new Blade Runner 2049. He's done tons of other things, Mission Impossibles and other movies for tons of people. But he just passed the morning of December 30th. He was 86 years old, so lived a great life. He just happened to die the same age of his father, which I thought was kind of neat. And ironically, he passed away in 2019, which is the year that Blade Runner was set. So, for some of us who know him very well, he always said that Blade Runner was his favorite project he ever worked on. And primarily because he was able to control so much of what it looked like. He was a little bummed that it, you know, was a negative, dark world, but at the same time, it just created an amazing cinematic experience for those of us who understand what Blade Runner is, you know, all about in terms of its firsts in the industry. But the passing of Sid Mead is gigantic because he's a 1 in 7 billion kind of guy. That kind of guy comes around no sooner than 100 years, probably more, 300 to 500 years, you get a guy like this. He was a living Leonardo. He was a living Michelangelo. I mean, the guy painted photoreal when no one else did. And he painted it at a level that was truly breathtaking. And people look at his artwork today and they're just blown away. They did it with this watercolor technology called gouache, which is a lot different than the watercolors that you and I did. But I have seen photoreal watercolors that he did back when he was in college that are real watercolors, the kind that you and I did where it was hard to keep the stuff from running all over the paper. And this guy, oh my Lord, what he was capable of doing was just tremendous. But Sid was also an amazing human being in terms of just being this naturally charming human being. He was so incredibly brilliant that one of my analogies for Sid is that you would go off and read a book that's like, you know, 3 inches thick, and then you maybe read a couple other books, and then you go over the internet reading about this technology that you're studying, and then you go eat dinner with him or have lunch with him, and you'd mention what you're studying, and he would just blurt out like the top end, super detailed stuff about what you're doing, which would be something you could only really repeat if you totally understood all the fundamentals but not below it. And you're like, Sid, you know, I know you work all the time. How the hell did you figure this out? I don't know. I saw it somewhere or something. Like, he just was a sponge. But Sid brought us the future. And, you know, to give you an example, when they did he would go to like Comic-Cons for things like Blade Runner. They went in 2013 in the Comic-Con down at San Diego. And Sid was signing his books. And he had, you know, very famous people in the room, actors and stuff, and the line for Sid's all the way around the building. And the lines for everyone else can be fed and, you know, kept inside the building. That's the difference with people that understand who Sid was. But I will say the way he checked out was phenomenal. He lives in this gorgeous, gorgeous place in Pasadena. And he has one of the most incredible partners, Roger, that he's just equally amazing as Sid for all different reasons and some of the same reasons. But Sid was sitting in his unbelievable living room. His whole house is just gorgeous, but his front room is like the place we all sat and chilled out and talked. And he was sitting there in his bed on the, may even been on the sofa. I'm not quite sure. It's big enough to be a bed, but he's got a 12-foot by 8-foot mural of his Pebble Beach painting, which is only about 18 inches tall, somewhere like that. But when zoomed up 8 feet, you would die if you had to paint what was on the wall left because the detail was so insane. But he had the fire going. He had his Christmas decorations still up, and man, they do it up right there. I mean, it's like, I don't know, it's like an enchanting land when they do all their Christmas stuff. But he passed away in his living room, surrounded by all this, plus like hundreds of these beautiful collector's edition little model cars that they would buy. The ones, I believe, the Smithsonian puts them out every once in a while. But they're very expensive. They're very gorgeous. He has like eight shelves of glass, something like that, and they're just all backlit gorgeous. So he collected a bunch of beautiful furniture over the years. So he sat with his partner, and his last words were, "I am done here. They're coming to take me back." And even his partner was like, "I'm not exactly sure what the hell that means, but Sid always believed in aliens. We kind of think he was an Anunnaki of some sort." But yeah, so he'll be deeply missed, but at the same time, he infected all of our souls, and we have now seen the future because of Sid. And, you know, Sid did all these incredible designs, and he always did designs that were to be realistic. You know, like Gene Winfield said, he built the cars from several projects, but definitely for Blade Runner. He said, you know, Sid doesn't design things that are silly. He designs things you could actually build. And even though we might be missing some of the propulsion system here and there, he's still, all we have to do is figure out what those propulsion systems are, and we'll have a spinner out of Blade Runner 82, right? But he worked up until probably about a year and a half ago, when he finally just kind of got old enough where he was like, you know, I can't really hold my brush like I used to. And that was a hell of an adjustment for him. But he was a trooper. He was a warrior through all of his little things that, you know, eventually grew to take his life in the end. But I had the privilege of working for this guy for 20 years. And I mean, literally to the... I started working for him in, I believe, October 22nd. It was either October or November 22nd. I flew to his house for the first time from the Bay Area at the time. I actually met him earlier that year and had correspondence the year before that. But, yeah, it was really cool. So we bid big respect to Sid on this show. And if you haven't seen the Sid tribute, it's episode 400. This year I also did the episode on Tron 1982, so that'll be a really good homage to Sid in terms of, I guess, documenting some of his genius in the movie and just really showing you how he thinks. You learning how he thought about design will help you think about everything in your life. So definitely get in there and partake. Okay, back to the episode I did about 30 minutes on before the camera died. That's really sad. So this Sony camera, when it dies, it tells you it's going to recover the data, but I don't know what its problem is. It should just be writing to the stick constantly, but it doesn't do it right. So anyway, believable science. There is this growing movement online, especially on YouTube, with people figuring out that theoretical science is all bullshit. And I mean that with a capital B. And there are people out there that know nothing about science of any kind, and they are trying to chastise all of us that have deep backgrounds in all things. And we're not convinced because we've learned the right way things work. We know about Nikola Tesla. We know about him writing several articles about how science was basically falling off the deep end by the 1930s. He was trying to warn everyone. He said, look, these hacks haven't created anything. And so why should you believe them? I'm creating all kinds of technology to give away energy for free, wireless technology, death rays, all kinds of stuff. Why don't you believe me? And he stood on the shoulders of giants, right? Who all believed the same thing he did. So theoretical science has really two prongs. It has deception and it has hubris. Those are the two reasons why theoretical science is funded and grows. The hubris side is what your average layman really gets into. Right? The person with very little education that goes, I know how the universe was created. Oh, really? Big explosion. On the deceptive side, you probably have Nikola Tesla being a catalyst for the whole thing, because he was starting to show everyone how everything worked. You know, all of these, you know, Faraday, Ohm, Volta, all these guys leading up to Tesla were really pioneering the mechanisms by which we would control the electromagnetic wave, which is electricity. But Tesla was like, okay, now that we have all this control, all these control mechanisms in place, I'm going to start creating inventions with this stuff. And what are our problems? Okay, well, energy is one of our biggest problems. You know, war was one of our biggest problems. Communication was just something that was going to augment humanity, that we could actually communicate across any border and across any continent and any ocean. And that allows us to learn about each other and then figure out how we can get along with each other, right? And it's going to be interesting. You know, I did this once before, so I figured out exactly how I'm going to do this. But, you know, where to start? Your theoretical physicists that are the most damaging are probably people like Albert Einstein, the complete and utter hack. Go see episode... Actually, no, Sid's episode's 300... Einstein's episode's 400, I apologize. But Einstein was a complete hack. Complete and utter. Peter Sellers and being there. The theory that he's most known for is E equals MC squared, which was finalized 1 year before Einstein was born. That should give you a nice little update on what you think about that guy. Now, some people hang on to him for racial reasons. You know, he's a Jewish guy, and Jewish guys are always brilliant. Someone just got in trouble recently saying that. But so, some people hang on to it for that reason. They take, you know, personal, well, my genetics are great. It's like, man, you shouldn't have to do that. You just look in the mirror, man. That's where your genetics are. I'm related. I'm white, but I mean, do I take every, you know, piece of accomplishment from every other white guy? That doesn't make any sense, right? But a lot of people just hang on to it because it fuels their grants, it fuels their education, it fuels their jobs, because they're tenure professors that won't let go. Science used to be this evolving thing. It was one of the most enthusiastic, mind-blowing, thrilling things to be involved in. And today it's, well, oh, you want to be a scientist? Oh, well, come in this room and, you know, get naked and get in the coffin and start masturbating and all this other stuff. And then tell us how you're going to carry our theories forward and tell us, you know, we're going to give you test questions where we're going to try to shake you from the theory, and we need to know how you're going to always defend what we're doing. And that's what science is today. Other theoretical physicists, well, you probably have Neil deGrasse Tyson. You probably had Carl Sagan. Now, some people were just believers, right? You know, what happens when you believe something and you look around and you say it and everyone else believes it too, or they're like, wow, you're that super smart person who believes or that thing, or you know about that stuff, you've studied it more than me, I'm going to give you accolades and accolades. You get to be in movies and television shows like Neil deGrasse Tyson. They always pump these guys up, make them celebrities so that you'll trust them as they shove shit down your throat. We have to get back to a point where we're willing to research things again. And there is, for any discipline of science, especially cosmology right now, everyone's waking up to the electrical universe. Next step is to wake up to the ethereal universe, which supplies the electricity to the universe. Get rid of phenomenon gravity and get to ethereal gravity. Now, some things are just frauds, okay? So oil being a fossil fuel is a complete fraud propagated by the Rockefeller family. I think the year was 1894, somewhere in there. They took a sample of crude oil to this Geneva convention or wherever the hell it was in Geneva and said, look, there's a microscopic amount of oxygen in this stuff, so therefore it used to be alive. It's all the dead ferns and dinosaurs from way back when. Now, all life on Earth stops at 16,000 feet. Okay, that's about 3 miles. But we find crude oil as far down as we can dig, and the Russians have done about a little over 8 miles on one dig. I don't think that's a very common thing because it's very expensive to do and unnecessary. But as soon as they were able to do that, The Rockefeller family, which had been selling oil from 1830s to the 1890s, well, they couldn't raise the price because, one, it's floating on the surface of the earth because it's a natural byproduct of the earth. And so they created artificial scarcity, which in the 21st century, in the latter part of the 20th century, we had these theories of peak oil. Now, we do drill the crap out of it, and we might drill it faster than the earth can make it in a lot of cases. So there should be a different word for that, over-drilling. Now we're doing shale, which has all that fracking, which is really nasty for the planet. I don't believe we should be using oil for hardly anything. We can treat metals with oil such that they're slick for the entire duration that the metal exists. That was determined in the 1950s. Plastics do come from oil, so there's probably a lot of real practical uses for plastic. Aspirin comes from oil. But if we can come up with any other technique to accomplish those things, we should. Oil comes from compressed methane gas. 1 carbon, 4 hydrogen, that's methane. When you crush it with more carbon, you reverse the polarity of the count such that there are more carbon than hydrogen, hydrogen being the explosive component. And when we refine crude oil, we are boiling off the carbon atoms. That's why when you look at diesel fuel from the 70s, it burned a big black cloud of smoke. You're seeing the carbon come off of the diesel fuel. But when you look at an F1 car go around the lap, you don't see any fuel coming out of the pipe. There's no catalytic converter on that thing. It is just pure burning fuel. But it's so high in the octane level that there's very few carbon atoms for every hydrogen atom. They love charging us $5 for a gallon of gas in the summertime in America. Although through Trump, it's only hit $4 a couple times. But when Tesla built his Tesla Tower from 1917 to 1927, showed it to J.P. Morgan, he goes, "What the hell is this thing?" He goes, "It's brilliant. I'm going to be broadcasting electricity into everyone's houses safely. And then at the device, it's going to turn back into this electromagnetic wave, which will run the device." At the time, he didn't really think about rechargeable batteries, but imagine that. Your phone is always charged everywhere you are. You're in an earthquake, and you're stuck underneath some rubble, and you got your phone in your hand. It'll always work. As long as they can get some transmission towers resupply with power, you can make a phone call every 2 seconds. Wouldn't that be nice? And because the cell phone towers wouldn't need to be wired to anything, they would work too. I mean, if Tesla hadn't been stifled, there would be any problem communicating anywhere in the planet, probably by the 1970s as opposed to the 1990s. But they had to shut him down. And then they had to hatch and supply individuals that will mislead the public with bad theories. But they had to explain things because things are happening right in front of us. And so they had to explain things, but put the word phenomenon in, like the definition of gravity. Let's take a couple little examples before we move on here. That's believable science. But I'm going to create an analogy that is completely unbelievable so that you can see how I see the normal theory of gravity as dictated in every book, every Wikipedia-type website. It has the word phenomenon in it, which means we don't know what the fuck we're talking about, is what that word defines itself as. Okay. Now, what if I said, and I've used this analogy in one episode, a bunch of Jesuits discover gravity, right? And they say, okay, this is what it really is. It's angel power, because God controls all things. So if you were just to drop this cigar, it wouldn't go anywhere, but angels push it down. And you're like, what? You know, if you're a Christian, you're totally into it, man. You're, oh, totally, man. I already believe a bunch of bullshit. So totally. Everyone else is wrong and I'm right. So that's your little metaphor. I mean, that's your little mechanism in your brain to believe anything in the whole fucking world, right? This is why I'm so cynical about believing everything literally. Like, believe it metaphorically and you'll get everything out of religion that they want you to believe. But let's just say the Jesuits do all the math perfectly. Their math, say back in the 1500s, works perfectly in 3D software in the 21st century. Let's just say, like some Idiocracy episode, we all still believe it's angel power because all the math works right. And the Jesuits go, see, I told you, angel power is this. And the math works out fine. So how can you possibly defy me? And then some of us go, yeah, well, your math is good, and we really appreciate that contribution to science, but we don't think it's angels. Blasphemous, cut his head off, you know. That's what gravity is to me. Now, for some of you, they think it's just buoyancy and it's just air pressure, and you're unaware of the experiments in high school where they took plexiglass boxes, vacuum out all of the air and all the pressure, and they take a feather and they turn it and it falls just perfectly fine. It's because ether is going through that thing easily and grabbing those particles and slamming them. Because the Earth is blocking so much ether in the universe, the ether that's slamming into its surface is what we know as gravity. It's a very weak force, but it's very important. But no atoms communicate with each other about gravity. Once things get close to each other, they can start getting entangled, and that's a whole separate thing. But if you had an atom on one side of the universe and an atom on the other side of the universe, these theoretical scientists have created such a crappy definition of gravity, they're telling you that they still exchange information between each other and would pull towards each other. Okay. But that's thrown out there so that you and I never ever create an anti-gravity ship with a force field, with inertial dampers, that we could fly around the world and they could shoot rockets at us and hit us with nukes and it won't hurt us because we have 100% control of our ship. What do they tell you about the center of the Earth? It's got nickel iron in it, right? That's what they tell you. Because it's magnetic. Nickel iron can be magnetic. And that's why your compass points north and south. The only problem is they tell you the center of the Earth is millions of degrees due to gravity, and it loses its magnetism about 6,500 degrees. I think it's Fahrenheit. Could be Celsius, but I think it's Fahrenheit. So it doesn't work. It immediately doesn't work. And isn't it funny that we know that we have Van Allen belts that protect us because the sun's coronal mass ejection has never fried a region of the world ever, right? At some point, there'll be the perfect storm for, you know, a CME coming off the sun and slamming into the Earth's surface and burning out one whole side of the Earth. Never happened, because we have this protective electromagnetic wave that ejects out of the North Pole, spreads out perfectly in a spherical fashion, slowing down, as a matter of fact, and then slamming back into the bottom of the Earth. All right. So where's all this electricity come from with this nickel iron theory? Doesn't make any sense. But for the same reason that the sun exists and has, by the way, black spots in it, where you can see into its bowels, it's the same book of physics that created the Earth and the same book of physics that created the moon. We have a plasma interior. It is probably hollow because the plasma is on the outside. What's plasma? Well, plasma is like a lightning bolt. Plasma is when you see a transformer eject that super white, you know, ribbon of electricity. It's the Jacob's ladder in those old sci-fi movies, where it just zaps up the two wires. It's probably extremely, extremely volatile, extremely powerful, extremely hot. Because what happens when you touch a lightning bolt? It burns the shit out of you. It's because it's moving so fast, it agitates you, and you're conductive as well, so it spreads all over your body and burns you out. But God forbid that we come up with a theory of the Earth that's electrical in its nature, thus immediately explaining the Van Allen belts. We've got to have some turd in the center of the Earth. I mean, it's really hilarious. So when Tesla started doing what he was doing, they realized they had a problem on their hands. This dude is inventing things. Now, he was way over anyone else. He died in the, what is it, the 40s, 45 or something like that? 45, 46, he was like 80-something years old. He was still way beyond any of us of the 21st century. But given enough time, we would have figured out his stuff had it not been confiscated. But before he was dead, he's the one that wrote all the papers saying science has lost its mind. His big contingency was that ether was the basis of all of his machines, and all of them worked perfectly the first time. Remember, Mark Twain was quoted as saying, "I am unable to see any wires connected to any of the devices in his laboratory, yet they're all powered." Now, technically, maybe he's a really good, you know, organizer of wires, and he managed to keep them all out of sight to keep everything clean. He was pretty OCD, but most people said he's just using his technology in his own laboratory to broadcast power to his own machines. In Springfield, Colorado, he proved that the Earth's core is plasma. That's the big lightning bolt picture you see in his big Tesla coil in Springfield. This is when he was wrapped in, what was it, 3.5 million volts of electricity, and his assistant had to reach over and turn off the circuit. And he said that time changed. He said all time compressed into one singularity in his mind, just to use a nice theoretical analogy there. And it's funny that Tesla was probably so brilliant and so ahead of everyone else in the world that it probably took these bankers a little while to figure out that, well, just what are we dealing with here, you know? But shut him down, shut him down, shut him down. Keep him happy in his little flat in New York, but just let's not let his stuff spread anywhere. In fact, let's take him out of the history books, which is what's happened. I never learned about this guy until I was probably in my 20s, and then that was pretty light knowledge. And then in my 30s, it was like, oh my God, what are we doing not teaching this guy, but we're teaching Albert Einstein stuff. The hack who stole everything. Stole everything he ever came up with, ever. The Nobel Prize he was on for the photoelectric effect was nothing more than a publicity stunt by the other two guys to make sure that they got consideration for the Nobel Prize, because they're going to attach this Peter Sellers character to it, this fake that was leading everyone down the wrong path. And why is he still worshipped to this day? So you'll read Bad Science and believe it. That's the truth, folks. Guarantee it. This video survives 100 years. People will be like, look how he was on it. And a lot of people were on it. But the hubris side of it's very interesting because, again, we want to know the answers to all things. We are man. We are the dominant species on this planet, and we don't like unknowns. At least some people don't. And so when a scientist comes out and says, you know, I know how the, you know, universe was created, and comes up with this complete story, if it's believable, then people believe it. And if you don't have any fundamental knowledge of the principles by which this theory is being asserted upon you, then you can't fight it. And that's the problem. And they know it. They know that most people just have trade skills and normal jobs, and they're never ever going to get to this level. Why would you? You would have to have a personal curiosity and then some serious tenacity to go get the information, to probably fail trying to get the information. Then you try again, you start talking to people that could get that information to you. And then you could start doing the physics of the Big Bang and realize they can't account for how it occurs. Because they measure all little nanoseconds down to the point of the explosion, and physics just absolutely disintegrates. It's a ridiculous, stupid theory. But it's what people believe. Now, even in the Big Bang Theory, like I talk about, and I've had some additional conversations since the last time I mentioned on the show, so I'm going to give you some other interesting, funny theories that people do to defend this. They didn't have enough mass in the universe to really account for their explosion. Meaning, you have to have more stuff in that singularity to cause the gigantic propulsion of all this stuff. And again, that's all based on the idea that Einstein submitted, which is, if something's moving away from you, the light shift is going to be red. If it's coming towards you, the light shift will be blue. Immediately, they found out that everything's going away from the Earth, thus putting Earth at the center of the universe. Oopsie. But initially, they said, oh my God, we don't have enough mass, so this we need to come up with a sort of a frog DNA, if you're familiar with Jurassic Park, or a glue to kind of keep this whole Cambridge University recently, you know, dug up out of the archives of the 1700s and using some old anthropology stories of the beginning of the universe that Joseph Campbell discovered, this ridiculous theory of the Big Bang. And so they just tuned a telescope to a certain range of light and said, we're just going to peer out there. And they get this cloudy picture, right? And they go, there it is, dark matter. And now dark matter is literally the glue for every stupid theory out there. If you want to question black hole, well, dark matter, bleep, 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 it's like, shut up, dude. I mean, seriously. Now, again, it used to be that you would say, quite accurately, well, we have to think of bad theories and inaccurate theories before we can find the good theories. And I would totally agree. The only problem is science is not allowed to move anymore. Unless you're denying biological gender, and then you can make all kinds of changes you need to it. But science used to evolve. Scientists used to know that they would be coming onto another whole domain of science that they could get into that was actually tangible, had physical models, and actually resulted in inventions and thus improvements to human life. But it's not that way anymore. It's being policed by the internet. It's being policed by all these colleges, which are all looking at each other winking because we throw away tens of billions of dollars every single year and euros towards these theoretical scientists who are wasting everyone's money and everyone's time. They are, by definition, closed-minded individuals. Once you're closed-minded and we can actually psychologically evaluate you as being closed-minded, you are no longer qualified to be a scientist. You are literally the antithesis of what a scientist's brain should be built out of. You should be extremely right brain, not extremely left brain. At best, you should be both fully realized, right? Like the Egyptians considered a fully enlightened human being to have a fully operational right brain and left brain. The men were taught the right by the women were taught the left by the men, because they realized genetically that's how whoever designed us beautifully created us. And what's kind of sad is that, you know, we know that we've had inequality, at least in treatment of women in this world. And it's usually based on some left brain capability. Well, you don't have upper body strength, so shut the fuck up, right? Oh, what does that matter? You have a stupid brain. You shut the fuck up, right? And so this has been how we've been managing our relationships between the two of us. The females bring us the emotional side. Of course, we got plenty of soy out there to switch it all over. But we, men, you know, typically we're like, we got to hunt and kill things, and there's no rhyme or reason to question how to kill something. Once we figured out how a spear can kill something, the only thing we would do is create a better weapon to kill it faster and put ourselves at less risk. All logic, logic, logic. I think it's interesting that men like dogs, because it's a very right brain thing, unless you're a hunter or something. In fact, a hunting dog does get loved like a family member, but for most part of their life, they're a left-brain utility. Get out there and point at the quail or point at something, so and then I want you to, I'm going to call it out, you're going to scare them out of the brush, and as soon as they fly, pow, and we're eating dinner. But it almost seems like a woman would be the first thing, maybe a child as well, of either sex, would be the first part of our genealogy that would look at a puppy and see its beauty and go, oh my gosh, maybe we should just keep this thing around the house, you know? It's very interesting. How many of you have seen that simulation of how the moon was created by a gigantic Earth-killing asteroid that hit the Earth and just turned it into dust, and then from that dust ball spun out this thing that looks nothing like planet Earth? And they want you to believe that the moon came from the same mass that the Earth is made out of. Seriously, we don't have any place on Earth that looks like the moon, and there's not a single speck of what we can see on that one side of the moon that we can see looks anything like Earth. No comparison whatsoever. But once they created that simulation, and it's sort of brilliant that these people can come up with these ideas, and that's sort of, it's sort of valuable to me to see that, but then in the end, at the end of the video, you go, that's really neat, but that's complete bullshit. Let's not teach that to our kids, shall we? If you want to teach that to our kids, let's figure out how it really happened, and then we'll show them our bad ideas. But if the kid grows up and becomes a scientist in cosmology, then they can go ahead and take the theory down the line. He walks in the room, this is what we got. It's not very good. It's pretty. It's not very good. How do they make people believe in black holes in this last year? They created this, you know, goatsy ring in space, and said that they took, you know, petabytes and petabytes of data coming in from these telescope arrays, and then they created this O-ring in space. And you're like, okay, all right, yeah, sure, totally. Just create a picture, and that's it. You've seen a black hole. Black holes don't exist, people. But what does NASA tell you? What do cosmologists tell you that are in this thing? Well, black holes not only exist, but they're where you can't see them, and meaning the center of the galaxy. That's a nice, fun, new theory. And they're also going to swallow up the whole universe. And so that creates this, you know, NASA selling doom, which is one of my episodes, that makes you fund them because, oh, maybe NASA will figure out how to get rid of a black hole. Not a chance if they did exist. But some people have like a problem with the notion that the Earth is hollow and full of plasma energy at its outer crust, right? They'll say, well, why is the sun on fire if it has a plasma core, and why is Earth not on fire? And what's up with these gas giants down the street? Well, the size of your sphere in space controls the displacement of ether, which controls its gravity, meaning how much it displaces and incurs undisturbed pushing. And the bigger you get, the more friction you entail, but the more plasma you have, and the more that it can't create a crust anymore because it's so massive. And with the proper amount of displacement, you could get enough gravity to create potentially fusion on the surface of the sun. Now, again, a lot of that's theoretical as well. People will say, well, we know the Earth's got, you know, some molten core because we have volcanoes. No, you don't. Yes, there's volcanoes. Yes, it spews all kinds of crazy stuff, methane gas being one of them. But the reason why is that, you know, first of all, man has only dug down, what, 8 miles, like I said. Okay, so let's say the Earth's core of a 8,000 generally diameter ball in space. Sorry, flat earthers, this is going to be a heliocentric conversation. But let's say it's 50 miles, both sides, you know, 50 and 50. So you have 100 miles of crust between one side and the other side. But the hollow center that's probably spinning, probably not going to change its orientation inside. You know, they keep telling you this whole thing, these horror stories about the North Pole is going to shift and move over to Greenland, or it's going to potentially shift and go to Cairo, you know, and then that part of the Earth is going to freeze and it's going to tip and it's going to be all weird. Or it's going to do a full 180. Whatever. Whatever. Does it wobble a little bit? Probably. Who cares? Wobbling's just an organic thing. Again, man's hubris says, well, the Earth's got to behave the way I understand it to behave, or I want it to behave, because I've developed all these ridiculous fears if it were to do anything else, right? Again, it's that multiverse, single universe thing, unified universe thing that the Higgs boson bullshit particle was trying to find. We'll go into that too. But so if you have this electrical core, well, what's plasma? Plasma, you know, again, you touch the lightning bolt, it burns you. Okay, well, imagine, I don't know how to volumetrically really talk about plasma, but it's a lot on the inside, okay? Again, Tesla proved it in Springfield, Colorado, in his famous shot. He was encapsulated in 3.5 million volts. His assistant had to break the circuit, like I said, and he is seeing time compress, all kinds of wild stuff when he's inside this thing. That's an interesting conversation we'll have to have at a different time. But that's because he put a tiny bit of electricity down into the bowels of the Earth, and he was able to pull out of the Earth's core infinite electricity. Isn't that cool? So you have all these materials that are down there rubbing against the plasma, and then you're going to have molten rivers, potentially miles and miles of thick molten core. It could be extremely thin, like the membrane of a human cell, which I think is like, I don't know, 700 microns or something. I mean, it's really super thin, right? So eventually, there's going to be a break in the soil, and that stuff's going to get pushed out, and you're going to have a volcano. It doesn't mean the inside's full of candy, man. You know, like the blue gumballs in the center or something. But we have to have answers for everything. But if you've ever talked to a scientist before, who is more of a memorizer and repeater, you get this huge, well, I'm a scientist and I fucking know everything and da-da-da-da. And it's like, wait, are you the guy on Jeopardy that's memorized a bunch of answers? Are you the guy in Mensa who's scoring 188 on your IQ test because you can think for yourself? You can deduce. You know all the cause and effect things that are observable in the universe, and you're able to make connections to make things make sense. Again, Van Allen belts, pure electricity. Where's it coming from? An electrical core. Oh, wow. Super duper mega genius connection I just made, right? It would also account for the fact that everything looks different, that the moon surface looks different because it formed organically based on its smaller size. Although way too big for Earth, it's all white. Well, you go look at the moons of Jupiter, you got like Io out there, it's almost, you know, well, it's got a couple of them, they're as big as the Earth. Well, it's going to look more like Earth. A little bit, it just depends on what it bumped into. Depends on what stage of its evolution it's in. But if someone tries to tell you things like how old the universe is, give me a break. Try to tell you how old the surface of, well, the Earth in general. Give me a break. Like I've said, the Earth expands. Whether you know that or not, or whether you like that or not, I don't give a fuck. It expands 19 centimeters a year at its current diameter. 19 centimeters, almost 18 inches, man. Or sorry, 9 inches, right? Almost. That's massive. It's a gigantic ball in space. So for it to go 4 inches in both directions, roughly, that's a lot of extra stuff. And that's going to do what? It's going to push the continents away from each other. And that's why we have oceans. Because the oceans are the brand new soil down below. That's why you have plateaus. Because that's the old surface of the Earth right at the top of the plateau. And I don't think anyone could possibly argue with that, right? Native Americans didn't stack rock in South Arizona. It's there because that's the way it was. People look at Devil's Tower and they see that volcanic, you know, tempered volcanic core in those hexagonal shapes, right? And those things are all over the world, right? But you're looking up there at the top of Devil's Tower, which was in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Well, it's the old surface of the Earth up there. And considering there was probably a mountain around it at one point in time, which eroded away as the Earth expanded and the surface broke down and went down to our level, our sea level, there you go. Theoretical science is fueled by one thing, outside of the incredible imagination of deceivers: mathematics. Okay. Well, you guys have seen those big giant formulas on boards, right? The famous E equals MC squared, you know, theory, again, figured out a year before Einstein was born, is based on a bunch of stuff above the equation. It simplifies down into this energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. Okay. So, if any of you remember even just basic programming or basic formulaic expression, and this works a lot in chemistry. It works a lot in electricity, in electrical engineering. Where again, the cause and effect is in place. Just like our angel power gravity, the equations work out. And so these scientists are like, you're an idiot for not believing this. Why am I an idiot? Because it works on paper. I'm like, well, okay, you keep taking what works. I'm just going to figure out a different reason why this works, because none of this stuff makes any sense the way you've defined phenomenon gravity, right? But a variable in a mathematical expression or a formulaic expression is a letter. And that letter represents something in the universe. If there's a quantity, it might be multiplied times that quantity, right? Cigar could be a C in an equation. If I had 10 cigars, it might be C times 10. There you go. Now we're dealing with mathematical theories of cigar existence. Great. But when you have these scientists that are creating dimensions of reality, it's phenomenal. You have string theory out there. String theory, which is largely dead, but it's starting to kind of making a comeback a little bit because people are starting to think about electricity and frequencies, and they like string theory because string theory holds the universe together. So instead of that that anomaly that we talked about a long time ago, which was, you know, you either have a infinite container for the universe with a finite amount of stuff in it, or you have an infinite container with infinite amount of stuff in it, or a finite container with finite stuff in it. You really can't have infinite stuff in a finite container, right? Because it would exceed the container. There's other theories about time and that kind of stuff. Now, some of this stuff, again, with theoretical anything, but especially theoretical physics, you may have some people that are actually onto something in some area of science. I assure you, if their conclusions start getting published and those conclusions start to argue with oil industry, with the power structure of the world, economy, all that kind of stuff, they're going to come down on that person hard. They're going to defund them. They're going to make fun of them. And they'll roll out people like Neil deGrasse Tyson to have a TV appearance to shit all over you or that person, right? Let's take some people, though. Some people that might be responsible for some of this stuff. You know, they have put actors out there. You know, Bill Nye, the douchebag guy. He's got a degree in civil engineering. He was an actor on a television show, I believe, in Washington State, I think. And they said, today, you need to be the science guy. And he's like, what? I don't really know. And he's like, good. We're writing all the scripts for you. Don't worry. Just wear this funny little outfit and teach kids basic science. Yeah, okay. So it's just an acting job. But he did that for enough decades that people are now going to him for all this regurgitation of crap. And the guy came out and said that, you know, we're not boys and girls anymore. You know, our genetics should be overlooked. And it's like, no, sorry. We are what we are when we're born. Now, if your brain thinks a different way, well, that's a whole different argument on top of what your genetics are. But if your genetics aren't what you're born to, you know, what you're born as, then there's no reason for sexual assignment surgery at all. You are exactly what you think you are. Well, that doesn't make any sense, does it? That's why the industry makes millions and billions of dollars off cutting people's junk off or adding stuff to people, right? Again, we're lost in this world. So he's pure propaganda, right? Bill Nye is all propaganda. And he will take a paycheck that will fuck up your kid's brain. He'll take a paycheck for it. That's what kind of guy he is. Then you have people like Carl Sagan. Everybody loves Carl. I tend to think that Carl's thing was that he was simply one of those guys that studied well, understood what he studied, and he made television shows like Nova, telling us what things, you know, what he figured out, what he was told. And he did such a dapper job at it that we all bought it. And, you know, again, it may not be a horrible thing to learn how it doesn't work. But a lot of times when someone tells you something wrong, it's very difficult to untell yourself that. You know, just to use religion as another logic problem here, because I recently talked to a friend of mine. She was like, oh, God, that's right. That's so stupid. You know, we are made, whoever made us, whether it be evolution, aliens, or like a god swimming in some Michelangelo painting, we're made flawed. We have the opportunity for choice. It's actually a gift, not a curse. So we're going to make mistakes. We're going to do what Jesuits might say is a sin. But then we need to worship God in a very special way to be forgiven for being exactly how we're made, flawed. And that is a fucked up formula if you've ever heard one before. Seriously. There's no need for any of that stuff. Be a good person. That's probably a good idea. Don't try to get stuff for free. Don't try to step on people's heads. I mean, free as in, you should have to normally do something to get it, and you're going to try to scam someone out of it. You know, if there's a free sandwich somewhere and someone's offering it with no strings attached, go and eat that thing. That doesn't happen very often now, does it? So I need to remind you in the middle of this episode that the controlling bodies of the world are totally hip to everything I'm telling you. They've been running the show for a very, very long time. You know, they want to treat us like mushrooms, right? And so they want to keep us in the dark and feed us shit constantly. That's their game. They want all the knowledge. And it's very strategic. They just care about archetypes of the brain. How does the brain function? Because the brain is a machine and it tends to repeat functions that it learns how to do. How many of you have, for instance, let's just use this show as an example. I had this mic right here, and I could just use one extra wire and plug it directly into the camera such that I don't have to track an extra separate audio track from the video. Well, let's hope this works out. If it does, I just shaved a bunch of editing issues off of my bed of editing issues because the video was always out of sync with the computer just a little bit. So after an hour and a half episode, it's probably off 2 to 3 seconds, and I have to constantly adjust that whole thing. Well, just me plugging this in. But I had learned what? I had learned serendipitously a bad way to do it. And so I paid a price. But now, today, hopefully, from this point forward, I won't need a computer to do anything other than just power the box. That's it. I'm using an old Mac right now to power the box. My PC's in my lab getting repaired. Religion. My God. If somebody tells you, I mean, just think about someone teaching you how to drink water in a weird way. It's not a life-crushing situation. You're probably more open to learning better ways to drink. As soon as you go in public and watch other people drink different than you, you're like, oh my God, I've been doing this wrong my whole life. This is stupid. But if someone tells you that your soul is going to go to hell if you don't do this particular combination of events, which is most normally worshiping other men on earth in order to get your salvation, other flawed creatures hold the key to God. It doesn't make any sense. It defies all omnipotent brain thinking. So it's time to throw it away. It's time to release ourselves from that and build a real relationship with your Creator if you think there is one. We're also addicted to technology that I believe is causing us serious problems physically. And this is where we get into believable science as it relates to our health. You are to believe that cellular technology has nothing to do with the extinction of bees, which use electromagnetic fields to figure out where they are, which is why they leave the nest and they go harvest a bunch of pollen that they're going to turn into honey, and they can't find the hive anymore, and they die. Vertigo is a contagion disease right now. It is like, it's not contagious between people, but it's something that you're able to manifest at a level that I've never seen in my lifetime. I've got neighbors with it, husband and wife, two distinctly genetically different pools. One's from Mexico, one's from Ireland, both coming down with vertigo all of a sudden. I've got family members of mine that have been struggling for years with vertigo. They literally have had to figure out how to walk around the world dizzy and nauseated and still find a way to eat. In fact, one person had almost an eating disorder because they were so nauseous all day long that by the time it came down to eating food, they had to kind of hold still for a little while and then get their appetite back so they could eat. We know that cigarettes, again, not cigars, right? Cigarettes, paper with gooey coating on it, with up to 1,500 chemicals per cigarette, with a horrible filter which shreds your lung sacs, were sold to people in the 20th century, as a health regimen. You know, hey ladies, you don't want to have a big baby, you know, through your vagina? Well, smoke cigarettes, you'll get that body weight down on your child. That was the actual piece of advice. And so we look at all those old ads from I don't even know when they started. I know that George and Gracie used to run commercials to promote cigarette smoking. All kinds of shows. Now we look at it and we're like, oh my God, look how crazy we were. I'm hoping that before this century's over, we can look at cell phone technology and realize, look how stupid we were broadcasting all these horrible microwave beams at our bodies, promoting insulin shock / diabetes in human beings because it modulates the interior of your body. These are medical facts, man. I think vertigo is people putting cell phones to their heads. If you want to think about this, and this happens to me every single time I put my cell phone in my back pocket, as long as I'm not doing something else that's distracting me, I will feel the burning sensation on my butt cheek of my phone. And it's not doing anything. I'm not playing a big game and just put it on pause. I'm just putting an idle phone in my back pocket. The electromagnetic wave that goes around your telephone when it's got very few bars is potentially, as I've had it described to me, 4 times the size of your telephone. And now you slam that thing against your brain, your inner ear, which gives you your equilibrium. Poof. It might be messing with the very genetic flow of materials inside your mind. I know that cancer, salivary cancer of the jaw, little lumps behind your ear. It's all related to cell phones. But it's a $1 trillion industry, isn't it? So you think they're going to tell you the truth? But it's believable when they say, you can't see it, so it doesn't exist, right? These threats you keep talking about. We wouldn't sell you anything that would hurt you. Have a cigarette. Mm-hmm. Have a Big Mac. Oh, but guess what? The corporations that run McDonald's, they're actually more financially stable than a pharmaceutical company. A pharmaceutical company, believe it or not, is usually hanging by a thread when it comes to their financial solvency, because they're constantly making, the place I worked for 2 years, they're making 3 drugs at once with all kinds of drugs waiting to be greenlit internally to then find the indication, to then go file the patent, and then develop through clinical studies, and then get it out the door. They have more financial pressure to lie to you than McDonald's. And what I find hilarious is your liberal that will tell you to take all your vaccinations and chastise you online when they know nothing about the science of anything, right? There isn't a doctor or a nurse that knows the ingredients of anything they've ever injected you with, ever. They may know the theoretical, believable knowledge of it, but that's got aluminum and mercury in it most of the time. But these same liberals that will tell you that the 1% is horrible, that corporations are horrible, and all this other crap about, you know, those people, will take a drug and put it in their body that will genetically modify them for the rest of their lives from that exact corporation. In fact, one of the most acutely corrupt corporation species in the world. But they believe it. Cancer. Cancer is a man-made thing, man. Everybody should figure out that if we caught cancer as much as we do today, the human species would have went extinct many, many years ago. It's a new thing created by bad food, electromagnetic waves around us, and a bunch of other stuff. Stress, just as simple as stress. Malnutrition is huge. Your immune system requires nutrients to be at its full game. We sit on our asses all the time nowadays, so we get all kinds of bad circulation in our blood and our body in different places. Remember all the guys getting testicular cancer that rode bicycles? It's because they're sitting on their ABC joint, and all of the blood supply that supplies their immune system to their testicles is coming down the ass crack of their butt and crossing over the ABC joint, fueling all the immune system to take care of things. Well, when you sit on that joint, poof, you cut off the immune system, and anything that's in there will go nuts. And if you're taking steroids, as a matter of fact, you're probably getting worse. So we have all of these oxymorons that are absolutely everywhere in medical science and science. And it's draining resources that could be much better placed in other areas. Again, the idea that, you know, I sat in rooms with these lead chemists, these head chemists, laughing about the notion of creating a cure. You know, probably once every 6 months the joke came up and everybody laughed. It was a whole hearty laugh. And then we read all the death reports from the clinical studies. No big deal. We'll get it eventually. No, well, that's too bad. It was never any of that talk. Ever. Now, I think if we go back a couple hundred years, a human being not studying everything was very normal and fine. Because you're not being attacked by everything. You're eating organic constantly because there's no such thing as GMO foods. You're not being irradiated by radio, television, cell phone technology, so you don't have that. The workday at best was 8 hours, and you went home, unless you're a farmer. But then farmers ate better than anyone else, right? And so today, many of us are becoming a jack of many trades, right? And masters of many sciences. And what I love to see on YouTube are all these videos calling these folks out. Now, I do hope that the individuals that are making videos are capable of going the extra mile and trying to disassemble some of these theories so that we can get to the right ones. There's been this huge push recently because of the, I think, again, false association with Project Looking Glass from Q being anything related to time travel and remote viewing. Now, I don't know if remote viewing, you know, works. But again, I did a whole episode on Project Looking Glass. If you're interested, please go see that episode. I break it all the way down and stomp it like a good cigarette butt. You know, time travel, you know, again, you'll have these geniuses say things because of theoretical science. Well, you know, time isn't linear, man. It's all multidimensional. So, okay, great. So go to that other time dimension and stay there, would you? But if you go make a modification in a parallel universe and come back to your own universe, what have you done to your own universe? Nothing. You've done nothing. So the idea of using this multidimensional space-time fabric to affect your own universe is ridiculous by your own definition. The only way you could possibly affect this world I'm in is to have it be linear and go back and, I don't know, kill Hitler or whatever the hell you think you need to do. But we also have something called climate change, formerly known as global warming, which requires a lot of cognitive dissonance. Keep saying that wrong. You guys keep correcting me, and thank you for correcting me. But you have to basically feed your mind full of crap. You have to literally be someone who's unable to research your own science. People who believe in this stuff are carrying someone else's propaganda forward. They watch Greta, right? A 15-year-old kid or whatever, how old she is. She is such a bundle of irony. It is unbelievable. But, you know, people who actually are experts in it, written 140 published papers on it. They totally disagree, say it's all bullshit. Again, the co-founder of Greenpeace knows it's bullshit. The head meteorologist at MIT says it's bullshit. The head patent-holding scientist at NASA for climatology says it's bullshit. Okay, do you need any more? Do you need any more than those few folks? And I forget the woman's name that was recently posted on Deep Thoughts Radio page on Facebook. But the authorities say this is, you know, or I should say the true authorities of this technology, of climate science, says this is all crap. Yeah, the climate does change. It ain't man-made, and it's no worry on our back, right? People have been so used to complaining about the weather in order to start a trite conversation with someone else that now they've been given a sort of a big, you know, bullying club in their hand to hit everybody over the head if they don't believe this crap. But we need to wake up, just like we woke up to snake oil in the 1800s, just like we woke up to cigarettes in the 1900s. We need to wake up with all of this technology for the 21st century. Talk about bullies. Greta is nothing more than an Asperger's child who is a bully. Running around with just an utter halfwit, man. You know, it would be interesting if you had some prodigy child who graduated college at 15, who specialized in climate technology, who specialized in creating new physical models of the greenhouse gas layer index, which is 99.9% water. And, you know, they pierce some thing that we can recreate in our living room or our kitchen to prove that some of this is real. But no, they play the demographics, right? They do this all the time. They give you a leader who has got something about them. You know, they'll say, oh, it's about time we had a female president. Okay, hey, don't disagree necessarily, but if there's a man that's more suited for the job, well, do you want to take down the leadership of your country just to put a woman in place? Now, there's plenty of women that can do the job, trust me. I'm just saying, those aren't reasons to do things. You find a person, right? Especially with all this, you know, this gender offense that's going on in the world, it's like, well, you shouldn't be saying a female or someone who isn't white, you know, those things are not allowed, right? Because you're supposedly this liberal mind. It's the best person for the job. Let them run, let them talk, poof. But if they don't do good during a debate, people say, ah, well, you know, they didn't do good during a debate, but they would have been a great president. And it's like, no, they wouldn't have. You think the pressure of a televised debate is any different than talking to other world leaders? Where shit matters. So if you're going to cave on TV, you're going to cave hardcore in a real fisticuff negotiation to denuclearize North Korea, to establish relations with Russia. But what fuels it all? Theoretical science. Believable science. Now, what's nice is we're sort of in this It's sort of dangerous and it's sort of great. We have a bunch of folks that are starting to believe nothing. And they really, you know, everyone goes through this phase when you start to wake up. You go through this phase of like, God, well, what's real? What history is true? What science is real? What politicians are fake, you know? But what we have to make sure, and this is very difficult for anyone to say, especially me, is that because we don't know the answers to all of our questions, like, let's say you think the world's flat, and there are reasons why people believe that, that I think are very valid reasons, and they're unable to, and believe me, the controlling forces know this, they're unable to prove it's flat, other than a few, you know, observations and stuff. But then what they really need is a rocket to go at least 80 miles in the air and take a bunch of photographs without a fisheye lens to make everything look round and look down at the Earth and see what it looks like. If you see curvature, and it's curved. If it's a flat thing, well, guess what? They're right. But, you know, like I said, I'm really concerned with this archetype. Maybe not specifically this particular thing, but if this does grow and it is a round ball, then boy, has everybody been duped. One of the classic things that comes out of Flat Earth believers is that because it's flat, they don't really have a theory for how satellites work other than satelloons, which again, satelloons were launched late 50s, early 60s. It's been a technology that exists to this day. They test things by sending them in low atmosphere, really low atmosphere, and then if that works out, then that's the test, and then they go ahead and launch it really high up in the atmosphere. Now, the thing is if it's flat, and the sun and the moon are these equal size balls, which an eclipse, pretty amazing, right? Random 93 million mile away sun is perfectly eclipsed by a elliptical orbit of the moon. Doesn't make any sense, people. But let's just say those things are up there. Well, whatever's holding them up there would hold up other things, is what you have to accept. If you are taught that satellites don't exist, then you're setting yourself up for a police state of supernatural capabilities, because what will be controlling your mind from space, and I do say mind, control your brain, control what emotions you're capable of even having, all that starts to proliferate the atmosphere with technology that you don't believe in. And then now you're suddenly a serial killer one day, and the next day you're running a daycare, right? So you can't get to the point where you lose yourself in this sort of bizarre, you know, chaotic world of what do I believe? It's good to have the exercise, I think, in any realm of any thinking whatsoever. But at some point, you know, we do have to get to hard evidence. The idea is, let's say you're a flat earther and you've got a lot of proofs in your mind that do suggest that that's the case. Fine. If you're lacking the proof, that you know, coup de grace moment, then you either have to go get that coup de grace moment, or you have to put everything on hold with, you know, your instinct and wait for someone else to do it so you have it. Maybe donate to someone's GoFundMe project that will actually get it done. Again, pilots all over the world now are saying the gyroscopes don't turn inside the dashboard of a plane and that they should. Okay, I'm not a pilot. I don't know. But if that's the case, then that seems like a pretty easy experiment. What I've never seen from these folks that show up on TV pushing this theory is they're the pilots telling us that. You got a cell phone, dude? Take a fucking picture, would you? Take a picture in London of the gyroscope. Then go to Cairo and take a picture of it. Fly from New York to Mexico City. Take a picture. Take a picture. It's all you need. Two pictures. Hey, you want to get really detailed with it? Get a camera that can last the entire trip and just keep it on. Plug it into the whatever power you got inside the plane. There. It's a continuous shot. No one can say you edited anything. You could, but, you know, and we'd be more apt to believe you if you cut the whole thing in one big shot. Run at 4x speed or whatever. The question I have for all of us at the end of this episode is, let's say that they spend, I think on average we could say at least $100 billion a year globally on theoretical sciences, right? We're going to do that CERN thing here in a second. What if we pulled that money out because no one's believing in it. We just, as a group of human beings, say, nah, sorry. Sorry, we have famine in the world. We have poverty in the world. We have all kinds of problems in the world that money could solve. Free education, better healthcare at least. You know, again, healthcare costs trillions and trillions of dollars because an aspirin will cost you $15 at a hospital. You know, I stayed a week in a hospital in 1985 or 4, maybe 85, can't remember. An aspirin at my hometown in the middle of nowhere was $8 a pop for a Tylenol. My dad could buy a whole bottle for $8 at the time, could have brought it in to me. That's why healthcare is ridiculous. Yeah, some problems we could solve instead of trying to chase a bunch of doom and gloom crap from NASA's latest, hey, please keep funding us because we've just told you that there's a meteorite coming that might hit your hometown, right? So CERN. I got a whole episode on CERN. It's very well received. It has quite a few views, as a matter of fact. But I break the whole thing down. The whole thing, okay? With all the details. But they had two physicists in America. This thing's a Euro-built CERN thing. CERN is the company. The Hadron Collider is the object. It's an 11-mile, I think, wide collider. It sits between, I think, Switzerland and France. It's the largest machine man has ever made. And the whole idea was that they want to find this, well, they're trying to find a bunch of theoretical science crap, which is just like the Big Bang, you know, oh my God. If anyone's working there and believes that stuff, F plus for you, man. But they had this theory that the universe was either very stable or it was very unstable. Multiverse is the unstable side of things. I can't recall off the top of my head what the hell the stable universe theory was called. But the stable universe dude came up with a frequency that the Higgs boson particle, a complete theoretical bunch of bullshit, was going to vibrate at. And the multiverse dude had his other frequency, which is obviously a lot more higher frequency. And so to appease these two dudes and their respective groups, when they found the Higgs boson particle, they put it directly between the two frequencies. And I mean mathematically directly between the two frequencies, giving a little bit of first, I think the Higgs guy was still alive. They wanted to give him the reward. And, of course, the press was screwing up CERN's Hadron Collider because they were like, hurry up, come up with something. Hurry up, we spent a ton of money. Hurry, 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 hurry. And they're like, someone just should have said, shut up, right? How many times did it take to build a light bulb before it one worked? The theory is 10,000. Okay, that's a light bulb, Ben. You want to try to find all the answers to the universe faster than they created the light bulb? Just put a big loser L on your forehead, okay? But that should have signaled to you complete and utter bullshit. That they just dialed it in to literally create a propaganda sort of PR moment in science. And to be looking for a particle that's theory goes back to the 60s. I mean, seriously, it was just an imaginary thing that had all the elements of all things in it. I mean, it was just, it's so bad, it's ridiculous. So it's time for us to grow up as a society. We know people that don't watch the show probably going to take a little bit longer. But think about it. Again, if we were to get our way and, you know, something like this show, this particular episode, this particular theory by somebody else that doesn't swear, gets really, really popular and travels the planet, and just anyone sitting in a coffee shop, anyone in the world gets it, and goes, yeah, you know what? I haven't felt that good since cell phones moved into my area. I haven't felt that good since GMO foods replaced our organic food. We're certainly not making enough money growing crops. Let's make some change. Boy, that's where, you know, you're at the starting gate of a labyrinth of trying to get out of the labyrinth, right? It's going to be very, very difficult. You know, probably the control experiment is to create a place in the world that has none of this stuff. Everyone eats organic. There are no radio waves allowed to be broadcast into this area. Perhaps erect some devices that eats up the waves, made of crystals or something, I don't know. And just see how healthy people are. It's interesting when they go off to these tribes that are very, quote-unquote, primitive, and they find people really old. And they're like, geez, without a bunch of medicine and technology and Rockefeller-owned hospitals and Rockefeller-owned food production, I should say. These people are live an amazing length of time, but then modern society moves in and everybody starts dying fast. You know, they get hooked on all the drugs that they use to control various regions of the world. And it's this sort of snowball running downhill. Oh, wow, we got some cheaper food. Oh, this is great. I can eat all the time now. Now my health starts deteriorating. Oh, great. I have all this cell phone technology, but I got vertigo all of a sudden. What the hell? And my bees aren't pollinating anything, so my crops aren't growing. And then you get depressed because all these things are happening to you, and then there's the drugs. Take those drugs, man. Escape. Destroy your body. Destroy your T cells. Die of something that looks just like AIDS. It has nothing to do with AIDS. It's just taking too many drugs. So it's a tall order, man. Super tall order to figure out what to do. And that's kind of why I created this show, which was like, look, we've already covered all the basics. So now we're going to the sort of 300 classes, right? But someone has to think about this stuff. Otherwise, we don't know how to win the game. But they tell us that we've won because we buy their products. As my old co-host from MK Ultra Radio used to say, we ain't buying what you're selling is probably the motto we should take at this point in life. Simplification is how the universe has been designed. You know, man doesn't need anything synthesized to exist on this planet. Sure, we want to create better shelters, probably create more efficient ways of creating food. But other than that, it's just basic stuff. We need a regimen of food that supplies our body with what it needs, not with what corporations want to sell us. Remember the five food groups? What a bunch of crap that was. Five food groups was to sell all the industries a country made. And then when you get older, you find out you're not eating certain things anymore. You know, French fries, well, they're a luxury that you don't need. You know, cake is a luxury you don't need. Sugar is a luxury you don't need. Creates inflammation. Creates all kinds of problems in your system. Diabetes, obesity. And, you know, there's so many oxymorons with the folks that pitch things to you. You know, don't fat shame somebody, but the second someone becomes a vegan and loses 200 pounds, the same people that say don't fat shame will put that person on a pedestal and say, look at how much food they, or how much weight they lost. Okay. I was researching Hawaii recently. I got a friend who lives over there, and when I visited, it was an enchanting place. And so I just got really curious about, you know, what it's like to live there. And, of course, I found out it was, I think, the second most liberal state in the union. What I didn't know, this will relate back to our subject in a second here, what I didn't realize was that the Polynesians, who really founded the islands, they feel very much like the Native Americans here on the mainland, and that they feel like their islands were stolen from them, and it makes complete sense. And it was one of those things that I was never taught before, and when I heard it just recently, I was like, oh yeah, that makes complete sense. And how sad is that, you know? But think about it. What I found out too was that almost all of the growth there, the fruits that they grow for everyone else to buy, it's all GMO. How sad is that? Nobody wants to go to the public schools because they're really bad. Okay. So think about who's running your state and think about maybe making a change to interrupt this insanity loop of, hey, these folks say they're for me because they say things that make me feel good about things, but they're running my state into the ground. They're selling all the land to other people. They've got our food all GMO'd. I mean, can you think of anything more blasphemous than taking the food in Hawaii and destroying its genetic makeup? I can't. Apparently, they have islands over there that if you're not Polynesian, you're not allowed on the island. Very interesting. A Republican would understand that, but a liberal should say, hey, that's racist. But a Republican goes, yeah. You know what? We totally see this thing being ripped off from you. We can't change what happened to the United States, but you still have some hope. Like, we can't, you know, we have to work on getting Native Americans to procreate at some massive level to get them back on top of the United States. But Polynesians can totally control and kick out all these assholes and retake their islands. You know, maybe you don't need to secede from the Republic, but you know, you can definitely change things and see if something happens, you know? And this is the era of what we're in. And I think that's just an archetype of a mind change that starts to potentially advance science the way it used to be with a lower, you know, case S to get it back into the evolutionary process. Anyone walking in the room with purely mathematical concepts, well, it's not like we have to shut them down, but they're going to go on that other wing of the college. It's like, okay, you go over there. There's not a lot of funding for you guys, so you better love what you do. There's not going to be these, you know, multi-million dollar grants for you unless you can come up with something super concrete that relates to anything but just math on paper. And just the very last statement I'll make is it blows me away that I'm in the year 2020 now. This is January 2nd, technically. And we still have phenomenon in the definition of gravity, and everyone's okay with that. Wow. You don't need to look any further than that. Absolute insanity. The emperor having clothes on. Insanity. To realize we got a lot of work to do. And just walk up to a scientist who's famous. Walk up to Neil deGrasse Tyson and go, is gravity a pull or a push? And if he says, oh, it's definitely a pull, then just write the guy off. Because anything else he says, if he has the most fundamental definition of physics itself, with the word phenomenon, its definition, he's not your guy. He's not your guy. Tesla, all the way back, didn't have phenomenon in the definition of gravity. They just had the word ether. Boom. Everything defines itself. Your body defines itself. The Fibonacci pattern is completely and utterly explained. Orbital energy explained. The core of the Earth explained. Well, that's a good starting point, in my opinion. Anyway, hope you dug the episode. Had to redo 40 minutes of that, at least. But if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. It's all spruced up for 2020. It has on it two sources for videos. We are getting onto Brighteon. It's going to take a little while. It's going to take a long while to get every episode up there, unless someone just blesses our channel to have all the content. I have asked for that privilege, and they have said sent some boilerplate email back, basically says F you. So whatever, they're not as cool as vid.me used to be. But BitChute and YouTube are still kicking it for us. BitChute is a great alternative. You should go over there and make an account just to support them. There's plenty of links for your podcast. Just get to your device. It takes a little bit longer to make the podcast episodes, but I just shaved a bit of the logistics off if this microphone trick just worked. There are three social media. There's a locked Facebook group, a Twitter page, and a Minds.com page. Minds.com, again, it's better than Facebook, and it's First Amendment protected. So please go over there and make an account as well. The link straight to the Deep Thoughts page is there. You can't get in without an account, just exactly like Facebook. There's also a few ways to donate to the page. There's PayPal for direct donations. Pays for all kinds of stuff. Again, if my laptop can't be repaired and I hadn't figured out this trick, the show would have ended for a few months while I would appropriate the money to buy a new laptop. Because I buy the biggest one I can find so that I don't have to buy it again. And I don't have that kind of cash just lying around. But Patreon is a cool way you could donate $1 a month all the way up. What you do is you get these episodes before everyone else about 85% of the time. And you get direct access to me, unlike all the other social media things where I have to filter through and try to get all the comments and YouTube. We get literally tons of comments every day on videos. But if you just get the Patreon, it's like you have a chat with me personally. So that's cool. For all of you who have stuck on to Patreon, thank you so much. Some of you came back recently. I super appreciate it. It does make a difference. I have two products that I want you to use if you need their services. One everybody needs, and that's the Brave browser. I have made no money from Brave browser, so it's not a monetary thing. But it basically is a new browser. It's not controlled by the deep state. You get it. You change your search engine from Google to DuckDuckGo. You poke their eye completely out. What the browser does, though, it cuts off all the trackers. No one can track you. If you want to run some VPN stuff underneath, knock yourself out. Again, the deep state knows where you are at all times with your IP address, so don't think you're getting away with anything in that realm. If they haven't come after you for your crime's not big enough, okay? That's the only thing there. But if you want to keep away, you know, corporations from knowing, that does work. up to a point, unless you're on their VPN service and you don't know, which you won't. But the other one, if you need a backup for your hardware in terms of your laptop or your desktop, I don't know if they do mobile, but it's about $7 a month, $7 or $8, $7.99, infinite storage for each computer, and that'll get you a year's worth of backup. It is so worth it, let me tell you. It has saved my bacon on many projects, including this show. There's also a store with two new t-shirts up there. I will be creating a few more before the year's out. So they're all going to be turned off as soon as the episode ends. So regardless if I make episodes over the summertime, the shirts are gone. So if you want to get just a little relic from this particular season, that's the way to do it. You will not find any season one episodes on this particular YouTube channel, if that's where you're going. But that's a separate channel, because I remastered them all, made them all better. So there's a link for that up on the website as well. I do get a question as to why the season one episodes aren't on the podcast. And that is not actually the case. The problem is that the podcast software usually limits about 300 entries. And I think their concern is that the RSS feed that feeds a podcast software gets a little too large to download. So all the audio equivalents are on the website if you want to do that as well. So you can also download them off the website. So you can just go to Season 1 Stuff You Dig and just click the download button on your phone. It'll go to your phone. You just play the MP3 file. So again, they've all been remastered much, much better. So definitely get up there and get in there and enjoy it. But until next episode, take care of yourself and someone else, and I will see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now. We'll be right back.